ॐ भद्रं कर्णेभिः शृणुयाम देवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवागुंसस्तनूभिः व्यसेम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्ष्यो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ ओ आल्माइटी गॉड मे वी हियर विद आवर इयर्स व्हाट इज ऑस्पिशियस मे वी सी विद आवर आईज व्हाट इज ऑस्पिशियस मे वी व्हाइल offering our praise to the Almighty with our bodies strong of limbs, enjoy the life which the Almighty God is pleased to grant us. May Indra of great fame be well disposed to us. May the all-knowing Pusha, the sun, be propitious to us. May Garuda, the vanquisher of all human miseries, be well pleased with us. May the Guru of the entire creation, Brihaspati, grant us all prosperity. Now, in the last class, I gave a brief introduction to Shankaracharya's description of the illusoriness of creation. In his commentary on the seventh karika, vibhudim prasavam tu anye manyande srishti chintakaha supnamaya sarupedi srishti ranneki vikalpita. We are dealing with this. The idea is this: those who think of creation hold it as manifestation of God's power, while others regard creation as same as dream and illusion. Now, you know, there are, broadly speaking, two streams, ontological streams, in ancient India with regard to the philosophical theories of creation. Two broad streams. According to some schools, creation is a real manifestation of a personal God's power, glory, and greatness. The God creates this world. According to some schools, God is only the efficient cause. God is not the not a material cause, means God is only nimitta karanam in Sanskrit, not upadana karanam. And according to some other schools, God is both the efficient cause and also the material cause. Those of you who may be familiar with me need no introduction, description. See, suppose manufacture a pot from clay. Clay is the material cause. It's called upadana karanam. And the pot maker is the efficient cause. So, this is one school, broadly speaking. That is, those who believe that creation is real, world is real, it is the real manifestation of the real glory of a personal God. And according to them, the highest concept of God was the Creator God. They look around the world, and if there is a world in front of you, a world in which you live, a world of which you are a part, then there should be a Creator behind this creation. A very logical analysis. And according to some other schools, creation was unreal. Of this later school, there were two subgroups. According to Advaitins, the world is unreal. The world is illusion only from the highest absolute point of view. The world is real from a relative point of view. The existence is not denied from a relative point of view. The only idea which the Advaitins, the non-dualists, emphasize is this. This world in which we live, this world of which we are a part, does not exist the same without any change in the past, present and future. It changes. Therefore, it is not real in the absolute sense. But then its common sense experience is not denied. So it is only relative. This is one group, that is Advaitins. According to another school, and they are actually the subjective idealists, they're called Vijnanavadins, the Mahayana Buddhists. It's called subjective idealism of Buddhist philosophical tradition. I would just give a brief outline of the four main schools of later Buddhism. Later Buddhist philosophy divides itself into two broad streams, the realists and the idealists. The realists are the two schools which are related to the Hinayana Buddhism. It is called Sthaviravadins. Mostly Buddhist philosophical traditions prevailing in Burma, Sri Lanka, Thailand, and such countries. But the Mahayana Buddhism, which was more prevalent in China, Japan, and a few such countries, which was much more popular and much more widespread. So there were two main streams in Buddhist philosophical tradition: the stream of realism, and the stream of idealism. According to the realist, the world is real, external objects are real. They are momentary, but they are real. Because what is called Nimishavada, I mean Kshanabhanguravada, they exist. Of course, the theory of momentariness is accepted in Buddhist philosophical tradition in a very general way. So, though external objects are momentary, still, they are real when we perceive them. This is the view of the two schools of realists. Technically, they are called Sautrandikas and Vaibhashikas. I'm just going because to understand Gaudapada's views and interpretation of Shankaracharya, of Gaudapada's Kariga, we should have a very good understanding of the fundamentals of Buddhist philosophical evolution. That is very important because Gaudapada refers to all the four schools of Buddhism. So, as I said, two main streams in later Buddhism. One is the school of realists, Sautrandikas and Vaibhashikas. Sautrandikas, one school of realists believed that external things are momentary, therefore they can be only inferred. That you can perceive them only through inference. They are something called Bahya Anumeya Vadinaha in Sanskrit is called. Those who believe that external things are real but can be perceived only through inference. Then there were another school of thought. They are also realists. They were called Vaibhashikas. They believe that external objects are real, the world is real. They are momentary, but real for the moment. But then they can be directly perceived. You can see them. These are the two subgroups of Buddhist realists. Then there were two schools of Buddhist idealists. The one school is very popular perhaps in for some parts of Western Hemisphere right now, they were known as Shunyavadinaha, means those who believe in the theory of voidness, the theory of emptiness. They believed that external things are unreal, and the one who perceives external things, the subject, is also unreal. Subject is unreal, objects also are unreal. They are sometimes called Buddhist nihilists. I mean, those who because they believe that emptiness or shunyam is the ultimate reality. In fact, to emphasize that everything is empty, they say even the word emptiness itself is not a proper description of emptiness, because if you define emptiness, if you call emptiness as emptiness, then it ceases to be emptiness. So to say, to emphasize that it is emptiness, they say emptiness is not emptiness, shunyam is not shunyam. This is, in fact, these ideas, those of you are interested, you can read, English translations are available. Of course, to get the correct understanding, you have to read this book. The book name of the book is Madhyamika Karika. Sometimes it is called Madhyama Shastram or Moola Madhyamika Karika, it is called. The author of this famous book, it is called the Bible of Buddhist Nihilism, means the Bible of the theory of emptiness, the school of emptiness. And its author is one of the greatest logicians the world has ever produced. After Shankaracharya, he was the greatest logician after Shankara that India has produced. His name is Nagarjuna, who may have lived around 6th century AD. And this book was interpreted by a great follower of this school of nihilism. His name is Chandragirti. He has written a commentary on Nagarjuna's Madhyamika Karika. Like Mandukya Karika, it is also a Karika. It is called Madhyamika Karika. Now we are not going to deal with them. We are now concerned with the 9 schools of creation which Gaudapada refers in Mandukya Karika. From those of you who got the book, you can refer from 6th verse to 9th verse in the first prakarana, Agama Prakarana. From 6th to 9th verse, in these 3 verses, Gaudapada refers to 9 schools of creation which were very popular and prevalent during his period, maybe around 5th or 6th century AD, 200 years before Shankaracharya. They also believed external things are unreal. It's called. But then they believed subject also is unreal. So there is no reality in the world. But we are now going to deal with the other school of idealists. They are called subjective idealists, very similar to the philosophy of subjective idealism outlined in Experience and Reality, Berkeley's School of Idealism, you find. So he also, the exponent of subjective idealism or Vijnanavada, it is called Vijnanavada, he also rejects the existence of external objects. But originally, the Vijnanavadin, subjective idealist, believed in the existence of a subject. But later, Vijnanavadins refuted that also. So, according to Vijnanavadins and according to Shunyavadins, that those who expounded the theory of voidness, emptiness, and those who expounded the theory of the unreality of external objects, Vijnanavadi, subjective idealist, both believe the world is an illusion. So, what I was trying to drive home was this. The 9 schools of creation that Gaudapada deals with, in the first chapter, that is called Agama Prakarana of Mandukya Karika, from 6th to 9th verse, these 9 schools generally can be analyzed and studied from two angles. One, certain schools which believe that world is real, and some other schools which did not believe the world is real. They deny the reality of the world. They argued that the world was just an illusion. These are the two broad streams of thought that we are going to deal with. Now, though Sophia got a book, you can just refer to these verses. It begins with sixth verse. I shall read the verse. I won't go through the details, because we are not concerned with one particular argument of Advaitins with regard to the illusory nature of this world. So sixth verse is Prabhava Sarva Bhudanam Satamidi Vinishchayaha Sarvam Janaidi Pranaha Chedam Sun Purusha Prathak. Seventh verse, Vibhudim Prasavantu Anne Manyande Srishti Chintakaha Supnamaya Sarupeti Srishti Ranyeki Vikalpida. Then ninth one is Ichamatram Prabho Srishti Idi Srishto Vinishchidaha Kala Prasudim Bhudanam Manyande Kala Chintakaha. Ninth one is Bhogartham Srishtihi Iti Anye Kridarthamidi Cha Apare Devasesha Subhavoyam Aptakamasya Kaspraha. So, 6th to 9th verse, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th verse. Here, you find 9 schools of creation are outlined. First school is Pranavadinaha, means those who argue that prana is the creator of this world. Energy is all that is responsible for creation. Energy creates this world. The world is pervaded by energy. So world is nothing other than just a permutation, combination, different manifestations of what we call energy, a subtle power that we can't see but we can feel. This is the first school of creation. The second school outlined is Purushavadinaha, means those who believe that a personal God creates this world. More like the description of creation outlined in the Genesis of the Bible. That is more or less, and God breathes his soul into the nostrils of man. Such words are found in some of the Puranic texts, ancient Hindu mythological works, which do have some philosophical significance, but they are mostly mythological works. From a Vedantic point of view, they don't have much importance. Those who believed in personal God as a creator of this world believed that a being with a name and form and with some supernatural powers is responsible for creation of this world. The third school, Vibhudivadinaka. According to them, the entire creation is just a manifestation of God's glory, the power of God. That's all. They also believe in a personal God as creator God, but instead of God creating this world as a pot maker makes pots and pans from clay, they believed the entire creation is just a manifestation of some supernatural powers which God possesses. The fourth school is Swapnamaya Vadinaha. That is a Sanskrit term in the reference to Mahayana Buddhist, mostly subjective idealist or Vijnana Vadins. They believe that the entire creation is just an illusion. They completely denied the reality of external objects. That is one important point of subjective idealists, Buddhist idealists. It's called Vijnanavadins. They completely denied the reality of external objects. The fifth school, Ichchavadinaha, they believe that God creates his world not because he is in need of anything, because if you argue that God created this world, then you had to admit that God did have a purpose behind creating this world, which means God had a desire to be fulfilled by creating this world. And that would make God limited. Anybody who has a desire, anybody who has something to achieve, is not perfect. He is in need of something. He has some wants. Therefore, God doesn't have any wants. Ichha means just as we breathe, it's a natural, involuntary action. Like that, this God created this world. This is the fifth school. The sixth school, they believe that everything takes place in time. They believe that the Creator, the Supreme Reality, manifests himself in the form of time as a supreme. Kalavadinaha. In Sanskrit, those who upheld this view of creation were known as Kalavadinaha. Those who are interested in physics, those who believe in different schools of creation of the world, of anybody who is interested in ontology, will find that many of the modern views of creation, many of the modern views of the world, its nature, its origin, are all more or less directly or indirectly hinted at, implied in these nine schools of creation. And the seventh school, that Bhogavadinaha, they believe that the entire creation is the result of desire of different living beings. When different living beings, not only human beings, but also non-human beings, when they have some desire, something they want to enjoy and experience, as a result of it, they do certain things. As a result, this world is created. That is Ichchavadinaha. And they're called Bhogavadinaha. Those who believe that creation is meant for the fulfillment of desires of the jivas, of different living beings, and the creation itself is the result of the attempts of different living beings to fulfill their desires. They were called Bhogavadinaha, or those who argued or believed that creation is the result of our desire to enjoy things. The eighth school was Kridavadinaha, means they believe it is just a play. God plays sport on the hobby, rather say. See, when you do something seriously, then you deliberate on what you are going to do. You plan, you scheme, you have a definite plan, and accordingly you do. But suppose when you are tired, in the evening after working for 8-10 hours in the office, when you are tired, then you play volleyball or football, whatever it may be. You don't have a plan. You don't want to achieve something definitely. It is just a hobby. Similarly, this creation is just a sport or just a hobby of its creator, God. So it's a leela. Leela means sport. Such theories are sometimes directly implied and refuted in Shankaracharya's famous commentary on Brahma Sutras. We are not going to deal with that now. The ninth school, Subhavadins. Here, Subhavadina. There is a point to remember. So those who read Mandukya Kariga may come across the view that Subhavavada was mentioned in this Kariga. Subhavavada actually means naturalism. But here, it is not naturalism that is implied, because naturalism is one school of materialism. There were two broad streams of materialism in ancient India. One is accidentalism, the other is naturalism. Those who believe that everything in this world happens to be accident. You need not, you can't think of a cause behind what is happening around you. There is neither prelude. There is no antecedent, no precedent. You cannot explain anything in terms of a fundamental cause for anything that happens in this world. They believe in Sanskrit language, that particular school of thought was known as Nirnimittavada, means those who believe that there is no cause for anything that happens around us. It's called accidentalism. Everything happens by accident. Then there was another school of Indian materialism, which was known as naturalism. It is also Swabhavada. It also part of Indian materialist school, Indian materialism. They were very prominent around 12th century BC. That was about 400, 500 years before the emergence of Vardhamana Mahavira, the prophet of Jaina religion. This Indian materialists, the Swabhavadins, were very prominent naturalists. But later, some of these schools of materialists, they merged with some fringe schools of Jaina philosophy. So later they became non-recognizable as distinct schools of thought. But here, the idea is, it is God's nature to give birth to this world by his involuntary will. God has nothing to achieve, no desire to fulfill. So this world just happens to come into existence. This is the ninth school of creation that Gaudapada refers to in these four verses, 6th, 7th, 8th and 9th verses of the Mandukya Karika, of the first Prakarana, Agama Prakarana. Now, we are coming to a much more serious subject. Advaitins say they are not at all interested in any of these theories of creation. Because according to them, creation is just like the performance of a magician. I already referred to the Indian rope trick that Shankaracharya refers to here. But maybe I shall remind you once more. Just see, in ancient India, they say there was a particular school of magic. It's called Indian rope trick. I mentioned last time, two well-known travelers have referred to this. They have themselves, one is Marco Polo, who was an Italian, who visited India around 12th or 13th century AD. And another one was Alberuni, who visited India in the early 11th century. He was an Arab traveler. Marco Polo was an Italian traveler. They refer to this. The idea is this. A magician comes. People are watching. People are assembled there to watch the magic show. He throws a rope into the sky. And then he announces, well, I have received a serious message. The Lord of Heaven has asked me to come and help him because the forces from hell are attacking heaven. So there is an immediate need of my going there and helping. The Lord of Heaven is Indra, maybe. So he has received an SOS, immediately he has to go to heaven and he has to defeat the demoniacal forces, the forces of hell, and he has to save the heaven. And so far as the onlookers are concerned, this juggler, the magician, climbs up the rope and slowly he vanishes. After some time, dead bodies, broken skulls, broken heads, and skeletons are falling, blood everywhere, you know, the whole field is littered with broken pieces of skulls and bones and all that. And then all people start crying and they suddenly. But then after some time, well, the magician says, no, there is nothing, no problem. Nothing is happening. You can open your eyes. In fact, they had already, they were watching the whole thing, but they mistook the whole thing to be real. Now, Shankaracharya refers to this in his Bhashya. He says, those who have really observed the whole show, the magicians coming, people watching, and then he's throwing the rope up and climbing and so on. But those who have really understood, those who have realized that this is just a magic show, won't be interested. They won't cry and weep when dead bodies fall, then the whole field appears to be littered with dead bodies. Because they know, they have seen perhaps a magic show like this sometime earlier. And they knew later on this magician will be sitting somewhere smiling. So they knew, they won't be bewildered. They won't be mistaken. They won't be deluded. Now, Shankaracharya says, those who really know the true nature of this world won't be affected by what happens in this world. They may live in this world, liberated souls. They may live in this world. For all external appearances, they respond to their duties. They perform their responsibilities. They may appear to be very active, but then, in reality, they will have somewhere in a corner of their heart the strong conviction that this is unreal. So, this idea is brought out in a very celebrated passage by Shankaracharya. It comes in the Mandukya Karya Bhashya. It forms an important part of the Bhashya to the seventh Karika of the first chapter, that is Agama Prakarana. The Karika is this, that the Karika means a verse interpreting the Mandukya Upanishad. Vibhudim prasavantu anne manyende srishti chintakaha supdamaya sarupedi srishti ranne vikalpidaha. After outlining all these schools of thought, Bhashyakara says, Vibhuti vistara ishwarasya srishtiridi srishti chintakaha manyende nadu paramartha chintakanam srishtu adharaha ityarthaha. What the Bhashyakara says is this. Those who ruminate over creation think of it as the manifestation of God's power. Those who really believe that world is the creation of manifestation of power. And so on, the nine schools of creation we have already described. But Shankaracharya says, Paramartha Chintaganam. Those who really believe in the supreme truth that the supreme consciousness, Atman or Brahman, is the only reality. This world comes and goes. And this world, all the problems associated with this world, pain, pleasure, happiness, unhappiness, coming, going, friends, enemies, pleasant experiences, unpleasant experiences, all these, they come and they go. They may have to encounter them. In fact, this passage contains a very solid, a mighty philosophy of life, which is perhaps the only armor, the only protection for modern man in confronting the problems of modern world. See, any other practices may help us, but not on a permanent basis. See, if you work for 12 hours in an office, then you come and do some breathing exercise or some witness that attitude, say you sit somewhere and your mind, you have to look upon all the experiences, all that is happening around you as a witness is objectifying, he is seeing, witnessing different objects. Well, it's all right. So, it's to some extent, sometimes it helps you to bring down your tension level, your stress level. Sometimes, you know, criminal tendencies also can be reduced by this kind of exercise, no doubt, because some criminal tendencies are caused by extreme manifestations of energy, again caused by phobia, mania, and sometimes depression and so melancholy and so many problems. In such cases, these practices like meditation, breathing exercises can and do play a very important role in reducing the tension level. But suppose some time back, some friends were asking, suppose some crisis happens in your life, the death of a near and dear one, or the market crash, or any such things happen. You go and start breathing exercise. It may help you to bring down the tension level for the time being. But how to confront this problem on a permanent basis? For that, you need a very solid philosophy of life. You should learn to look upon the entire life and world from a different angle. Well, the world with all its problems and also with all its pleasant experiences. The world with its happiness and also unhappiness. Not only unhappiness, happy experiences also. They are all relative. They are not everlasting. They come and they go. Just as a magician comes, he plays a trick in front of the spectators. The spectators are deluded if they are gullible enough. But there are some spectators, maybe this magician's son may be walking with him, camp followers. He may not be deluded. He may have seen so many times his father playing this trick in so many royal courts. So, the delusion affects only those who are seeing this for the first time. So, Shankaracharya says, those who are really spiritual seekers, those who really want to go deep into the real significance and meaning of human existence, they are not at all interested in any of these nine theories of creation. Whether they believe the creation is real or whether it is just as a dream, as the subjective idealist, the Mahayana Buddhist believe, Vijnanavadins believe. That's what Shankaracharya says. So he says, Paramartha Chintaganam Srishtu Na Adiraha. Those who really are seekers of supreme truth, they have absolutely no both. They are not interested in any of these different theories of creation. Nahi Mayavinam Sutra Makashi Nikshipya Tena Sayudham Aruhya Chakshur Gojarada Matitya Yudhena Khandasya Chinnam Padidam Punaruthidam Chapashidam Takrata Maya Mayadi Satatachindayam Adaru Bhavati. See, those who have seen this magic so many times, you know, maybe the king, maybe very often these jugglers used to visit the royal courts and used to play their magic in royal courts. The king may have seen so many times, and he has, after this, he may have rewarded the magician and he will go away and he will play the same game elsewhere. So those who have really seen the magician playing this game, they are not affected by this magic. Similarly, those who are really seeking the supreme truth, those who are realized that the supreme consciousness, the immanent, the omnipresent, and the transcendental reality, which is called Atman as the immanent indweller, and Brahman as the origin, sustaining principle, and the ultimate dissolving principle of universe. Those who realize this Atman and Brahman is the only reality, they have no interest in any of these theories of creation. Before that, there is a famous mantra which is quoted from, it comes in Rigveda Samhita and in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad also, Indra Mayavi Prarupayate Iti Sutehe. That is quoted. Now, then Shankaracharya says, Tathaivayam Mayavinaha Sutra Prasarana Samaha Susupta Supnadi Vikasaha. Now, the waking state, dream state, deep sleep state, all these are the only three states of human experience, of human knowledge. All these are just like the act of juggler or magician throwing up this rope into the sky. And when the magician is seen climbing this rope, and he, as he climbs this rope, he reaches different levels. These different levels are like the one who experiences different objects at the gross level in waking state, and who experiences different objects at the subtle level in dream state, and who experiences kind of relaxation, pure blissful experience in deep sleep state. These three states are like three points through which the magician goes up climbing, clutching to the rope on his way to heaven. That is only just magic show. And then, so, tathayvayam, mayavinaha, sutra prasarana samaha, susupta, supnadi, vikasaha, tadarudha mayavi samascha, tatstaha. So, somebody who is experiencing all this in waking state, in dream state, and deep sleep state, just like a magician who is sitting on the rope, climbing to the sky. Actually, the magician is sitting somewhere behind. He may be relaxing, sitting somewhere. The whole thing is a show. That magician who is not actually sitting on the rope, but sitting somewhere far behind, maybe he's sitting in an easy chair, relaxing. All these people are watching, they feel that this magician is going to heaven, clutching the rope. But the real magician is sitting somewhere behind. What is that? Who is that magician? That magician is Turiya, the Atman. Because this Atman is not a participant or an actor in this game of life. So this game of life, this game of worldly existence is only a delusion. But you have to remember, Advaita never tells you that from a relative point of view, this world is unreal. It doesn't say that. Remember, Shankaracharya says in another context, Prag Brahmatma Vijnana Sarva Loka Vivakaranam Satyattu Upapatthi Yatha Prag Supta Seva Prabodhat. Prag Supta Seva Prabodhat. Bhashyakara says, now when you are dreaming, your dream experiences are real. For a dreamer, waking experience is unreal. Deep sleep state also is unreal. Only dream experience is real for the dreamer. That's why the dreamer is shouting, crying, weeping, maybe roaring, because he is seeing a nightmare. For the dreamer, waking experience is not real, because waking experience is that he peacefully sleeping somewhere in a dark room. But in dream, he is seeing an elephant chasing him. So he shouts and cries and makes noise. So for him, the elephant is real. The fact of elephant chasing him is real. The fact that he is actually sleeping in a dark room is unreal. So waking state is unreal for a dreamer. Dream state is the only reality for a dreamer. Shankaracharya does not deny this point. What he says is this. When you are living in this world, you should consider these worldly experiences as if that is real, and then try to practice spirituality. Listening to these Vedantic ideas, trying to practice these Vedantic ideas, and then gradually you realize that these relative experiences are only relative experiences. Because till you realize the relativity of the relative experiences, you think the relative experiences are absolute. You understand the relativity of the relative only when you go beyond relative. When you are within relative, the relative is not relative for you. The relative is absolute. When you are dreaming, dream experience as real as the waking state experience is real for ordinary people living in waking state. So Shankaracharya is as realistic as idealistic. But he says, when we are living the relative world, we have to study these ideas intellectually, try to convince ourselves of these ideas theoretically, and then try to remind. Because even you intellectually grasp these ideas, mind is still somewhere else, you know. We all live mostly at the mental level. What we pursue intellectually is only a theory under normal circumstances. Those who do not try to actually practice, I mean those who do not make an effort to practice what they learn remains mere theories. So Shankaracharya says, you must try to bring these intellectual ideas to the mental level. That means the gap between mind and intellect, the mental level and intellectual level, should be bridged. And listening to these stories, meditation, contemplation, and constant contemplation on the illusoriness, the transitoriness of this phenomenal empirical life, is the one exercise which will help us to translate a theory into practice, to bridge the gap between the intellectual and the mental level. So then Shankaracharya says, so maya vinaha sutra prasarana samaha susupta supnadi vikasaha tadaruda maya visamascha tarstaha prajna daijasadi. So I already explained the three states of waking state, dream state and deep sleep state. Prajna is the seer in deep sleep state. Taidasa is the seer experiencer in dream state. And Vishwa is the seer or experiencer in waking state. All these are, that means practically all our experience levels of empirical world, empirical existence are only relative. They are in the absolute sense, they are unreal. They are real only in a relative sense. This should be understood. So when you live in this world, when we do our duty, when we perform our duties and responsibilities, somewhere in a corner, we have to keep this idea in mind. This world with all its pain and pleasure, happiness and unhappiness, are not these experiences. And the world and also these experiences are not eternal. They are not everlasting. They come and they go. They are all transitory, fleeting experiences. This is the implication of the statement. Then he says, sutra tadarudhabhyam anyaha paramartha mayavi. Where is the real magician? He is sitting somewhere. Now those who are really absorbed in seeing this magic, they don't see the magician. Because the real magician may be sitting relaxing somewhere, it may be sitting on a chair, and all these people are watching the whole thing, they think the magician has gone to heaven and is fighting all this. Now, if you see the real magician, then you won't see this magic. If you are absorbed in this magic, you can't see the magician. So if you are really aware of the fact that you are the Supreme Consciousness, you are the Atman, you are the immanent, all-pervading, omnipresent, transcendental reality. If you are experiencing this supreme truth, then you won't be seeing this world. Just as when you are if you can see the magician standing somewhere in a relaxed mood, you won't see the magic. Both cannot be seen together. When you see the world, you won't see the Brahman. When you are experiencing Brahman, you won't see the world. You may see the world, live in the world, but you won't see the world as a reality. You will see the world only as something unreal. That's the implication. So, saiva bhumishtho mayachinno adrishyamana evasthita. Bhashyakara says, Shankaracharya says, this magician is somewhere, he is sitting, standing on earth. Bhumishtha means he is sitting or standing on earth, not anywhere else. He is not gone to heaven or anywhere. But then he has concealed himself by a maya, by a delusion. So, when you are deluded, then you see the world alone is real, Brahman is unreal. So, every spiritual seeker has to go through these three levels of evolution. At the first stage, every human being thinks world alone is real. Whatever you enjoy, you pursue with your mind and intellect and five senses of perception and five senses of action, that alone is real. Everything else is unreal. This is the normal understanding of an unevolved person, anyone who met. World is unreal. Brahman is real. This is the reality. But at the beginning of human evolution, Brahman is unreal. World is real. This is how an ignorant man looks upon the world. For him, Brahma Mithya Jagat Satyam. That is the understanding of a most unevolved, primitive person. But then you ask any scientist, well-educated, thinking person, anybody, not necessarily a mystic, a well-educated philosopher, a scientist, a rational, evolved human being, highly civilized, refined person, he won't tell you that this world as he finds around him is real. He won't do that. He or she won't tell you the world is real. A rational scientist guided by real spirit of search for truth won't tell you the world that he finds is real, because reality means it should remain the same in the past, present and future. It should not have any change at any point. It should be experienced at the same in the dream state, waking state and also deep sleep state. And it should not undergo, it should not belong to the three points of time, past, present and future. It should remain the same. It should be unborn, it should be deathless, immortal also. No scientist, no educated, rational human being can tell you this world is real in that sense. But then he won't tell you that this world is unreal. Because you understand the unreality of the world only when you realize the reality of something else. Because unreality cannot be even intellectually conceived of except in the context of something which is really real. So he would tell you the world is indescribable, beyond definition, beyond words, beyond description. So it is called anirvachaniya, means something which is beyond definition. Then a mystic, a spiritual seeker who has reached the highest level of mystical spiritual experience realizes this world as he finds is unreal, because it is subject to change. It is Yesterday's world is not the same as today's world. So it is certainly not real. So Brahman or Atman of the Supreme Consciousness, the immanent, the transcendental, the omnipresent reality is the only reality. Everything else, including this world, is unreal. So this is how a human being evolves, either in spiritual sense or in a cultural sense or even intellectual sense. But then, once you realize that highest reality, the supreme truth, that Brahman or Atman is only reality, then you won't look upon this world as real. If you are really able to see the magician sitting somewhere in a corner relaxing, then you will not think that magician who is climbing to heaven, clutching the rope, is real. It is only a show. So this is how Bhashyakara explains the whole thing. Yatha tatha turiyakyam paramartha tattvam. Ataha tachindayameva adaru mumukshunam aryanam na nishprayojanayam srishtu adara iti ataha srishti chintaganam eva etai vikalpita ityaha supnamaya sarupeti. So Sri Shankaracharya says, similarly, those who realize the supreme truth, those who have realized the reality of Turiya or Atman and Brahman as the only reality, in the only eternal truth, they won't look upon this world as real. So this is how a human being evolves. First he thinks, or he or she thinks, this world is the only reality. And then, as you need not necessarily be a spiritual man or woman, he or she may be a scientist, a real philosopher. Such a person will realize this world is certainly not real, but he is not convinced of the unreality of the world. So he or she thinks the world is indescribable. It is anirvachaniya. So, and then when you really realize the supreme truth, then world is perceived, realized to be unreal at the highest mystical experience. When you realize Turiya or Atman, Brahman is the only reality, everything else is unreal. This is the point. Now I think today we have, if you want to ask a few questions, we have maybe 10 minutes, we can clarify this point and then we can conclude. If there is any discussion that you would like to have. Yes. No, in the Bhashya literature, it is described as a state which is neither dream nor waking state. So, antaralavastha, that is a term used in the Bhashya literature. Antaralavastha means some word between. But it is not dream, because you don't dream anything when you are under the power of, even you are in the operation theater, if you have anesthesia, something like that. Murcha, in Sanskrit called Murcha or Antaralavastha. The term is used in Sanskrit, in Bhashya literature, Murcha or Antaralavastha. You don't dream there. Only when you naturally go to sleep, then only you dream. Otherwise, you don't dream. In the operation theater, the patient, when it is an enforced, forced state of unconsciousness, he doesn't dream. But it is not sushupti, it is not deep sleep, because deep sleep is always associated with a feeling of bliss, relaxation. When you get complete deep sleep, you feel completely rested. So this state is not associated with that kind of blissful, restful experience. At the same time, it is devoid of dream. A patient who is under the anesthesia won't dream. He is not conscious of anything. But such a state is similar to deep sleep, but then it is not deep sleep, because in deep sleep, you have the feeling of restfulness or blissfulness. It is not waking state, that's very obvious. So what is it? So in the Bhasha literature, two terms are used to describe this stage. I would say it is similar to the state of an individual under the power of anesthesia, or murcha. In Sanskrit it's called murcha. It's kind of epileptic or something, you know. So it is, but then one point is certain, the Turiya Atman is present in these states as well. That's the idea behind. Atman is present in these states, no doubt about it. Because after coming back from the state, there is always a link between the pre-anesthesia state and the post-anesthesia state. There is the pain starts after the anesthesia is that the influence of medicine medicine wears off. So that's why it is called Antaralavastha, Murchavastha. It is different from all the three stages. But the Turiya or Atman is present in all the three stages. It comes in the Bhashya. Bhashya doesn't use that term, but he uses two terms, Murcha and Antaralavastha. What is the?
What do they postulate as the reality?
Vijnanavada is divided into two phases of development. In fact, Vijnanavada continued to flourish for almost 600 years. It was a very famous system of thought. So there are two phases in the evolution of Vijnanavada. One is the period of Alaya Vijnanavada. The second is the period of Swatantra Vijnanavada. So the Alaya Vijnanavada, the earliest school of Vijnanavada, was associated with great thinkers like Maitreyanatha, Vasubandhu, and so on. According to this school, Alaya Vijnanavada, you find this Alaya Vijnanavada is associated with many other similar theories which developed during the early centuries of Vijnanavada. According to them, subject is unchanging. Objects are unreal. They argue that objects exist only so long as they exist in your chittam or mind. Chittam is a platform of mind where these external objects come and go as a flow. So the earlier Vijnanavadis did believe in the reality of a permanent subject. Then, from Dignaga's time onwards, Vijnanavada took altogether adopted a new approach. That school of Neo-Vijnanavada came to be known as Swatantra Vijnanavada. And its most prominent exponent was Dignaga, who is also one of the greatest logicians of India, and he is the exponent of the Madhyama Nyaya. Nyaya philosophy in Indian school of logic, he played a very important role. So, according to Dignaga, not only external objects, but subject also undergoes change. So, he departed from his teachers, the earlier Vijnanavadins, and he altogether chalked out a new path by arguing that the subject also undergoes change as object. So practically, it became very easy for Shankaracharya to demolish this system. First, his object is also changing. The who is perceiving the objects? If you argue that subject is unreal, objects also unreal, then who perceives the object? There should be an unchanging subject, then only objects can be objectified. So Dignaga wrote some of his books, and in fact, Shankaracharya's elder contemporary Kumarila Bhatta studied he studied Buddhism to refute Buddhists under Dharmapala, who was a commentator of this famous book of Dignaga. The famous book is Alambana Pariksha. So Alambana Pariksha is the Bible of modern Vijnanavada, Swatantra Vijnanavada, which expounded a theory that not only objects, subject also undergoes change. There is nothing that is permanent in this world. So it became a very vulnerable system of thought. So Shankara had a walk over them. So very easy to demolish such a school of thought, which says that objects are unreal, subject also unreal. Then who is the subject? Where is the subject? Who enjoys this experience? I said, any other? I didn't go into the details, because maybe when we deal with those karigas, we may come into those details of these two schools of Vijnanavadins. There are fundamental differences. Dignaga's system was a departure from the earlier school of Vijnanavada, expounded in the earlier books like Vijñapti Matrata Siddhi and such famous books.
How do they defend that? I mean, Swamiji, that second school, how can they defend that argument?
Vijnanavada was refuted in Brahmasutra Bhashya Virodhadhyaya in the second chapter, where Shankaracharya demolishes all non-Advaiti schools of thought. It was not defended in a way. See, in fact, the defense of Buddhist idealism started only in 20th century, actually. The 20th century. After some political events caused the migration of many Buddhist scholars into Western Hemisphere, where they wrote English books in English language, where they tried to give new interpretations to theory of voidness and theory of Vijnanavada. For many centuries, Shankaracharya's arguments were never refuted or countered. There was no answer from the Vijnanavadini's camp later for many centuries. So, there is no further clarification required, then I will. Okay. Now, there is an announcement before conclusion. We will not have class next Friday, September 28th. The next class will be on Friday, October 5. Please remember, there will be no class next Friday, September 28th. The next class will be on Friday, October 5.
Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.